From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Boys and girls, many years ago in the distant pre-texting past, people had a special kind of paper called stationery, and small handheld writing utensils called pens. And people used to use these pens and write by hand their messages to others on this stationery. And then they would fold the stationery just so and place it in an envelope, place a 5-cent stamp on it, and mail it. These mailings were called letters. And sometimes people sent them to friends or to their grandmothers, and sometimes even to people they had never met. Letters are a lost art form. My guest, Ellen Fitzpatrick, a former professor at the University of New Hampshire, has uncovered a box of letters that bring us back to the darkest days of the winter of 1963, when every heart in America was broken by the sight of a small boy saluting the passing casket of his father, the fallen President of the United States, John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Ellen Fitzpatrick's moving new book is called Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation. Ellen Fitzpatrick, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
Have you ever written a letter to someone you never met, or did you when you were a little girl?
Gee, that's an awfully good question to start out with, and I have to confess that I don't remember. I've certainly, as an adult, written letters to people I didn't know, but as a child, I wrote thank you notes, I think. But I'm not sure that I ever wrote to someone I didn't know, and alas, I did not write to Mrs. Kennedy.
Well, where were you on November 22nd, 1963?
In November of 1963, I was an 11-year-old growing up in Amherst, Massachusetts. President Kennedy had visited my hometown on October 26th of 1963. And it was a very exciting day for me. He had come to dedicate the Robert Frost Library. So I actually saw my first American president 1 month before President Kennedy was assassinated. On the day of his assassination, I was in the sixth grade, and I heard teachers discussing this, that someone had shot the president. And I instantly believed it because I had heard my parents discussing in the morning a climate of extremism then in Texas and worries about the president's trip to Dallas.
I also remember my teachers. I think it was the first time I ever saw a teacher cry, that is, aside from us driving her to tears, but this was one where she was crying due to events. And it was very frightening, actually, for us to see this, at least for me, to see this teacher crying. I'll never forget that. But, you know, it really did strike me when I was reading Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation. What a lost art the letter has become.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I made my way through these letters, just seeing the stationery and looking at the handwriting and observing people's efforts to put into words on pieces of paper their grief, I learned so much just from the physical objects of the letters. There were letters in which you could actually see the teardrops having dried on the paper and, you know, having smudged the ink. And it was really a part of the research process to actually hold these letters, to see them, to read the original letters. It was extremely revealing.
Well, for you and me, you know, we remember the death of President Kennedy, but there are a lot of adults, even that makes us feel of a certain age, there are a lot of full-grown adults who don't remember it or who weren't alive. And so for them, you know, it's you know, death removed by distance. And this book seems to remove that distance, bring us right back to that, to those raw emotions. All the letters, almost all the letters in your book are written around the few days of November 22nd, 23rd, 24th. There's some little bit later on, but mostly in that initial period.
Many of the letters were written right away. There is, in fact, the first letter in the book is from a man who has heard the news flash on television, the initial one that said that there had been an attack on the motorcade, that the president had been shot, but no further news was known. And he began his letter without knowing what the outcome of this was, and he gets halfway through his letter and then writes, "Oh, my dear, it appears we have lost him," as the second news comes across the television that President Kennedy has died.
Yeah, what a different world we lived in, when people felt immediately this urge to write a letter. It's very strange. And this book just really brings it so current in it. There's one letter that begins, "Oh God," you know, just like this is exclamation as this person has pulled out their pen and started writing instantly.
Mm-hmm. You get I think one of the things about the letters that is so compelling is that there's no real censorship, or one doesn't have the feeling, you know, that anyone has listened to 25 commentators and then decided what they think. They just sat down and poured their hearts out to Mrs. Kennedy, and many of them said, you know, I don't expect that you'll ever see this letter, but I have to write it.
That's interesting what you say about the commentators, because I think today, you know, with instantaneous internet and whatever else there is, you know, people don't have a chance to form their own opinions. It's been that way for a while. I mean, I think, you know, you're watching a presidential debate, and before you even have a chance, well, as soon as it's over, or a speech, before you even have a chance to assess it yourself, they're telling you exactly what they think. But this was a time, a political time, is very different than the time we're in now. I wouldn't say that General MacArthur was an enemy of President Kennedy, but there was certainly no love lost between them, it seemed. But MacArthur, the way he says something like, his death kills something in me.
Yes. What? Yes, that was an extraordinary telegram that he sent. And it's true, you know, I had forgotten, of course I knew it as a historian, but it came back very vividly to me as I sat reading the letters, how close the Kennedy assassination was to the Second World War. You know, I think of Kennedy as a very modern president, and, you know, when we teach American history at the college level, we might have a course on the post-World War II period. We begin in 1945, and we begin marching through the years, and by the time we get to the early 1960s, quite a bit has happened, and of course that's true in the history itself. But there were so many World War II veterans that wrote to President Kennedy. There were families who had lost sons and fathers and brothers in the war. There were Holocaust survivors, refugees from Nazi Europe, writing to Mrs. Kennedy and describing the kinds of losses that they had experienced during the war in an effort to comfort her, or veterans who very much identified with President Kennedy. So that was very, very striking to me.
And politics just completely disappeared. That, you know, and even before President Kennedy's assassination, once President Kennedy was elected, generally the country got behind him regardless of their political affiliation, although your book does point out that there was an uneasy feeling in Dallas, but generally speaking, Americans were behind the president.
They were. It's an interesting combination of things that you see. In a way, the letters provide a snapshot of the country in 1963. One of the things very much on display is the anti-Catholicism that Kennedy had to deal with. There are a lot of letters from people who say, "I didn't vote for him because he was a Catholic." And there were others, of course, who were very proud that he was the first Roman Catholic president. So those kinds of religious biases are evident. There's a tremendous amount of material about race. We're really at the cusp of the civil rights movement. It's still the age of segregation, and the range of racial attitudes and experiences are recounted very vividly in these letters.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Ellen Fitzpatrick, and her book is called Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation, a collection of letters Americans wrote to the First Lady, or when she became the first widow. I don't know, what do they call that? But when I said it was a box of letters, I really meant a lot of boxes of letters. I mean, how many letters were there, and how many survived?
Well, there were originally, within 7 weeks of the assassination, Mrs. Kennedy had received about 800,000 letters. Those letters were from Americans, and there was a lot of foreign mail as well. Within the next year and a half to 2 years, that number had climbed to about 1.5 million letters. And it was her intention that all of these letters be answered, and a staff of volunteers did so. They opened every letter, they read each letter, and each person was sent an acknowledgement card from Mrs. Kennedy thanking them for their expression of grief. And then when the letters were given to the John F. Kennedy Library as it was being formed in the mid-1960s, the library is part of the National Archives, and the National Archives felt that there were just too many letters to handle, and so they pulped a large part of the collection. They kept about 15,000 letters from Americans. A team of archivists went through and picked representative letters, but they also kept big samples, 3,000 letters that were unprocessed so that a scholar could see what the original inflow of letters was like. And in addition to that, there's a great deal of foreign mail that I did not focus on, but I did read the 15,000 letters from Americans in the collection.
Well, how many of them, to your knowledge, did Mrs. Kennedy actually read?
We don't know the answer to that, and all I can say about that is that what she said to the nation when she appeared in January of 1964, she said that she read them as she could bear to read them, but that she was greatly moved by them and wanted them to be saved not only for herself and for her children, but so that future generations would know how much President Kennedy had meant to the American people and to people around the world.
Well, so these letters have been sitting there in the Kennedy Library all this time. How did you find them and decide to compile them?
You know, it was one of those things that was, it was almost like a cartoon where you see an individual sitting there thinking and there's a light bulb in a little balloon. it was a light bulb moment. I was going to the Kennedy Library to work on an entirely different project, and I was interested in trying to kind of peel back the layers of the onion and look at how Americans viewed John F. Kennedy in his own time. There's been so much written about him in the ensuing almost 50 years, much of it appropriately correcting the historical record, that students today don't really understand why Americans seem so drawn to him. He was only president for a short period of time. They see that, you know, they make the case that he didn't accomplish all that much. So what was the Kennedy phenomenon all about? And it just came into my head. I remembered the condolence letters. I remembered sitting with my family, seeing Mrs. Kennedy thanking the country. It was her first appearance since her husband's funeral on national television. And I went into the archives and said to the archivist, gee, do you have any of those condolence letters? And he explained that a lot of them had been destroyed. And I said, well, do you have some? And he said, yes. And I said, well, let me see a box or two. So they brought two boxes up. These are archive boxes. They each have about 8 file folders. I opened the first file folder. I took out the first letter. It was from a family of Eskimos in Alaska. Hmm. And from there, I turned to the next one, and the diversity of the letters writers was what really captured my attention. Coal miners, dairy farmers, people who were living in abject poverty, wealthy people, Republicans, Democrats, you name it. They were represented in these letters.
And lots of letters from children.
Many letters from children. Some of the letters, there were entire packets, you know, that were stapled together that were clearly a school assignment. And those letters I read through but did not use. If it looked like the teacher had written on the board, you know, here's our letter to Mrs. Kennedy, here's a chance to say you're sorry and practice your penmanship. But the letters from children that seemed spontaneous, or the child had sort of strayed off the reservation and put their own comment in there, really rewarded reading, and there are quite a few of those in the book.
Can you think of any that strike you right now?
There is a wonderful letter from a young girl who is 10 years old who writes to Mrs. Kennedy, and she asks that Mrs. Kennedy leave in the White House one of his President Kennedy's rocking chairs. And she remembered seeing pictures of the president in his rocking chair greeting foreign dignitaries or with his children playing in his office. And she writes so eloquently of her wish that someday she would be able to go to the White House and run her hand over the arms of the rocking chair that had belonged to President Kennedy and would remember this youthful president who had done so much to inspire her. And it's just such an incredibly eloquent statement from a young child. It's an extraordinary letter.
One that struck me was the one that the kid says, "I'm sorry, he's dead."
Yes, me too. I was, and I wish that I could have reproduced that letter in the book. It is written in very large block letters, and his mother wrote underneath it that he had written this on his own. He was 7 years old, and she said it really just summarizes how we all feel.
Yeah, really. And I mean, so I mean, a lot of letter writers put a lot of themselves into it. I mean, you know, almost too much of themselves, maybe sometimes. But this kid had nothing but just that, you know, so simple.
There's another wonderful letter from a young boy who says that he's very sorry, Mrs. Kennedy, and he said, "To show how much I like the president, I'm going to try to be a better boy." And I actually had to contact all of these letter writers to get their permission to publish the letters. And when I got in touch with George Wysota, who wrote that, and we had a very wonderful conversation at the end, I said, "George, I just have one question. Did you keep your promise to Mrs. Kennedy? Did you turn out to be a better boy?" And he said, "I think I did." So it was rewarding to meet up with some of these folks.
We're talking with Ellen Fitzpatrick, and her book is called Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation. It's fascinating that you were able to find so many of the letter writers.
Well, I had a lot of help with this from a group of genealogists who I hired to assist me in the process, and a wonderful permissions editor who worked with me throughout the project as well. So I began on my own, and the first letter writer that I called was living in the house that she lived in 1963.
Wow.
And I was lucky, because that was hardly the case for most of them. There's so much social and geographical mobility in America that most of these people had moved away. Many of them were dead. The adults were no longer living, and I had to find their next of kin. So it became a fascinating adventure, research adventure. And we were like a team all in it together trying to track these people. And it was absolutely exhilarating when you found somebody who, you know, I really wanted to use a particular letter. I mean, we were trying to find inmates, people who had been inmates in federal penitentiaries when they wrote. Some of the people were very, very poor. And we had remarkable success in locating most of the people I wanted to include in the book.
Oh, and so were there some letters that you desperately wanted to include, but alas, you could not because you couldn't?
Yes, there were. There were, at the final moment, there were about 20 people we couldn't find. And each one of them was painful to me to not be able to include in the book. I was able to use a few phrases or lines from a couple of them that I really wanted, but the names were so common, and the people had just disappeared, it felt like, off the face of the earth, and we just couldn't find them, even despite this incredible ability of these researchers to locate people.
Well, so your first step then in compiling this book was you read all the letters and you looked for the ones you wanted most.
Yes.
And then you started looking for the people.
Correct. And it's interesting, from the day I began the book, I saw the structure of it. The letters really fell into three clear categories. There were people who talked about November 22nd, where they were, how they found out. There were people who shook the Kennedys' hands at Love Field, who were standing on the motorcade route, and only to get back to their car, turn on the radio, and hear that the president had been shot within moments. It was devastating. And there is a, the second section of the book talks about politics, society, and views of the presidency, and it really includes letters that explore social issues and political debates of the time, views of the presidency, comments on Kennedy as president. And the final set of letters are letters that are about grief and loss, in which people talk about their own experience, their life experience, in an effort to try to help Mrs. Kennedy with her bereavement.
And what about the demographics of the letters? Not necessarily the ones that you published, but in the bulk of the letters that you examined, were there more letters from one racial group or another, or one religious group or another?
No, they're really very, very diverse, and they represent, you know, all races and religions and nationalities, and, I mean, it's just an extraordinarily diverse collection. I would say there are probably more letters written by women than men, but they were often family letters, and one parent would write the letter, and it would be signed by all. But even there, there are many, many letters from men. There are a lot of letters in the collection from African Americans, and that was fascinating to me because historians have been extremely critical of President Kennedy's kind of tardiness in introducing civil rights legislation, his failure to act promptly to protect civil rights workers in the early 1960s who were meeting with violence in the South as they were engaging in sit-down strikes and so forth, and sit-ins, excuse me. And so those letters I found very, very interesting. They are a testament to how strongly many African Americans felt about Kennedy's initiative in introducing civil rights legislation and how much that commitment meant to them. So those were very interesting as well. But they come from, you know, small towns, big cities, and every single state in the Union.
Well, Ellen Fitzpatrick, there's been a lot of books written about President Kennedy, about his life and his presidency, and there have been many books written about his assassination, and they're always focused on, you know, the single bullet theory and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's ever been a book quite like this one, but for you, what was it like to sort of dwell in this death and this, you know, this mourning period? Was it, what was it like?
Well, I don't know. I think that, you know, sometimes I think that Irish people have an infinite capacity for sadness or melancholy. And I felt that it was something that I sat there and could bear. But I also was tremendously, what's the word to use? It gave me a sense of faith and renewal and optimism about the American people. This is less a book about President Kennedy. It's certainly not a book about Mrs. Kennedy. It's not a book about the Kennedy assassination in the sense that you note that there are all these theories about what really happened. It's a book about the American people in a moment of historical catastrophe, or so many of them felt. And what came through so powerfully to me was their decency, their compassion, their thoughtfulness, their care, their kindness, and their very honest soul-searching and concern about their country. And that made, for me as a historian, very, very compelling reading.
Well, gosh, it seems now like it would be fascinating to be able to hold these letters up and compare them to letters written to Mary Lincoln or letters
yes.
written to Eleanor Roosevelt or maybe letters written after 9/11 or something
yes.
like that.
Yes, I think that that's right. And I have thought many times how wonderful it would be to have a collection of this kind about President Lincoln's death, because we know it certainly, each one of the events that you named created a tremendous outpouring of grief in the country. And it's documented in various ways, the response to the death of Lincoln, for example. But there's something about the visceral and, you know, raw quality of these personal letters that I think captures, in a very, very sharp and vivid way the response of Americans. And for that reason, I felt that they would be a very important part of the historical record.
Well, so what I'm asking you now is, are you going to compile another book for us of a similar theme?
I'm going to leave that to some energetic young historians, and I hope I will inspire others to look at these. There are condolence letters in the Roosevelt Library, not as many, I think about 75,000 letters were received. There may have been more than that, but that's what exists in the FDR Library. I think the letters to Mrs. Lincoln, I suspect, are scattered and probably don't exist in this kind of abundance. So there's a lot of work out there to be done by other scholars who I hope will, make use of the collection that I used, as well as some of these other wonderful sources.
So we shouldn't look for letters to Jackie, too.
I have no plans for more letters to Jackie. Not right at this moment. I must say the whole project was a very intense one, and having just come out of it, I'm just eager for the book to find its readers, and I'm very pleased to be able to have done the project.
Well, the book is very well received and has been getting a lot of press, and we're happy that you've been able to spend some time with us on From the Bookshelf. The book is called Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation, and the author, Ellen Fitzpatrick. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have this week on From the Bookshelf, but I'll be back again next week with another great program, and I hope you'll be here then. In the meantime, you can check out our podcast page at KUSP.org, and you can find us on Facebook and iTunes. I want to thank our From the Bookshelf staff, Miss Breanne Beal, for all of her hard work. Thanks, Breanne. And thanks also to my guest, Ellen Fitzpatrick, author of Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation. Thanks for listening, everybody. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. Bye-bye.